18 months before Catherine Schulz's beloved father died, she met the woman she would marry. In the new memoir, Lost and Found, she weaves the stories of those relationships into an exploration of how all our lives are shaped by loss and discovery. From the maddening disappearance of everyday objects to the sweeping devastations of war, pandemic, and natural disaster, from finding new planets to falling in love. Catherine Schulz is a staff writer at The New Yorker and the author of Being Wrong. She is a winner of the Pulitzer Prize, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
So give me a sense at what point you started to look at both sides of the equation, of this equation, of the lost and the found, and thinking of it in that way.
Sure. You know, it began with the lost section. Shortly after my father died, I wrote an essay for The New Yorker that was about my grief over his death, but also about losing things more generally, you know, cell phones, car keys, elections, you name it. And a couple of people asked me if I was interested in expanding it into a book, and I really wasn't at that point. I didn't want to just sit and do nothing but write and think about grief and loss. And then I was actually on a road trip with my partner in the middle of nowhere, Alabama, in the middle of the night. And we were discussing that essay and my resistance to expanding it. And she said, well, you know, what if you wrote about the flip side? What if you wrote about discovery, too? You know, there's the grief of loss, but the joy of finding new things. And of course, the most wonderful thing I've ever found was her. So right away, I thought, oh, OK, there is this kind of mirror image thing that I could write, which would be an exploration of discovery and encounter grounded in my love story, the way that this exploration of loss is grounded in the story of grieving my dad. So that was kind of the first piece that fell into place. But what really sealed the deal for me is, while we were talking about this, she happened to use this phrase, lost and found, and who knows, maybe because it was 1 a.m. and the mind is a strange thing in the small hours, I landed on the middle word, not the lost or the found, but the and. And I was so struck because I do think that our love is always threatened by the possibility of loss and grief, and our grief is always the product of our love and our joy, and they are really inseparable experiences. And in fact, a lot of life is characterized by feeling more than one thing at once and experiencing more than one thing at once. So it was in that moment that I thought, oh, okay, that actually is a book. And in fact, it's a book I want to write.
What I love about the book is how straightforward it is. It is elegant. It is beautiful. But it's such a straightforward tribute to your father. Your father died in 2016. He was 74 years old. My mother was 76 when she died. And I just remember thinking, wow, that seems really young. And I guess by averages, it's not, but it seems young, doesn't it?
It really does. And I think, you know, the thing about losing someone you love is there's no amount of time with that person that would have been enough, you know. And I know what you mean, you know, partly because, you know, certainly in my father's case, he was a very vivacious person. And the idea that so much energy and enthusiasm and love could just vanish from the world seemed borderline impossible. But, you know, I recount this in the book, but not long after he died, I talked to a friend of mine whose father was still alive and well at 94. And I just thought, you know, 20 more years, I could have had 20 more years with my father. And even in the case of a, you know, quote, good death or a relatively peaceful one after a relatively long life, it's really hard not to feel robbed anyway.
You describe your father as part Socrates, part Tevye. give us a sense of your father and I guess more deeply the relationship that the two of you had.
Sure. My father, thank you, first of all. I really, it's very meaningful to me that you responded to him as a character, because probably my deepest hope for this book, I don't care what people think of the book, but I hope they love the main characters as much as I do. And my dad was a really lovable guy. You know, he, without ever being dominating or domineering, he was kind of the most obvious presence in any room he was in. He was not a tall man at all, but, you know, he had a kind of booming voice and he loved to laugh. And so his laugh would just fill up spaces, and he loved people. He was curious and compassionate. And, you know, if you walked into his room right now, if he were still with us, he'd want to know everything about radio and everything about you and where did you come from? And, you know, do you like peanut butter? And, you know, you name it. He just was interested in, right, people and in the world. And that's a really fun way to grow up, because, of course, he was incredibly interested in his children and from the beginning took us seriously as people and was curious about us and nurtured our sense of curiosity. And I feel lucky every day to have been raised by him. And I should say, definitely by my mother as well. It's unfortunate how the living don't always get the pay-ons they deserve while they're around to appreciate them.
Catherine Schultz is our guest. The name of the new book is Lost and Found, a memoir. You say to be prepared is not to be spared. Tell us a little bit about how you mean that when it comes to bereavement.
Sure. You know, in the case of my father, and this is certainly true for a lot of people, you know, his death was not, strictly speaking, a surprise. He had been sick for many years with many, many different things. You know, it wasn't like he was diagnosed with cancer and we watched him steadily fail from that. He just had a lot of the kinds of chronic problems that tend to accompany aging, and they increasingly became a sort of insurmountable burden on his system. So, you know, it was clear he was not going to be able to keep going forever, although he had so much vitality and kind of emotional energy that the physical failing was, you know, tempting to overlook or just to kind of, in a wishful thinking way, assume we could just sort of put it off indefinitely. But even when he was in the hospital for what turned out to be the final time, you know, at some point we did really know he was almost certainly dying. And at some point we definitely knew because we chose to move him to hospice care. And yet all the knowledge in the world that someone you love is dying and all the support in the world, a loving family, you know, these wonderful people in hospice care who were really just terrific with us and terrific with him. All of the happy decades that precedes it, none of that really takes away the pain of death. I don't mean to suggest it's irrelevant. You know, it's certainly very different to sit with an older beloved relative while they die than to lose someone, you know, suddenly and shockingly, especially when they're young. So Right. There's obviously, you know, there are differences, and yet, yes, you're never spared the pain of death. You know, no matter how good or peaceful or how long the life that preceded it may be, you still, in the end, you're left grieving.
You read in the book, and this was a line that I loved, where you say, like anything that goes on for too long, you basically make the point that grief is unbelievably boring.
Thank you for responding to that line, although I'm sorry because I feel like people who pause at that line have been there. Yes, it's interesting. It's not how we conventionally talk about grief. In fact, it's often discussed as a really dramatic emotion, which of course sometimes it is, but it is boring. You know, by a month, 3 months, 6 months into doing it, you just feel, you know, I make the analogy in the book to, like, you know, having a bad back or having a mortgage you can't afford. It's like every day you wake up and it's there. You know, every day you wake up and you're in pain. Every day you wake up and there's no more money in your bank account. Every day Right. You wake up and your father is still dead. and it, at some point, it is just emotionally tedious to be living with it.
I was the youngest of five boys, and when my mother died, my father was still alive, very much so, and he has since passed. But I remember even at that point feeling like an orphan, and of course you're not, but it feels that way at some point. And also that this grief, the boring aspect is interesting because it never really goes away. You can have, at least this has been my case, it's been, I think, 12 years now, that you can have these attacks of grief that hit you harder than anything has hit you 2 months or 2 weeks after the death. It doesn't have an expiration date, and it can sneak up on you in really weird times, and that makes it a little bit unpredictable, but it's really always with you.
I think that's right. You know, and again, I don't mean to suggest nothing gets better. Of course it does. And
yes,
the stretches where life feels good and fine get longer and longer between the bouts of real grief. But sure, I mean, I write, you know, almost half of this book is not a grief story. It's a love story. But I'll tell you, if you want to feel all over again the real pain of losing someone you love, you know, I married my partner and my father couldn't be present for that. And we now have this beautiful, incredible little baby daughter, and she fills me with joy every day. But I, to your point, I've almost never been as heartbroken about my father's death as I was one day when it just hit me in all of its fullness that, you know, she would never know him and he would never meet her. So yes, it does. It comes back and it comes back and it comes back, but it does also get better.
Do you come to some, I don't even know what word I want to use, but do you come to some understanding of that or to some meaning of that can help you understand or help you deal with that in the sense of, oh, well, he knows about her or that, you know, his presence is still very much a part of her. Is there some thing that helps you connecting the two who unfortunately are disparate?
I think so, yes. I mean, and in that sense, you know, I write in the book that I regard loss and grief as a kind of prod to our conscience, you know, to remind us to notice the world around us and be grateful for it and be attentive and generous to it while it's here with us. And, you know, in the absence of my father, you know, we tell our little daughter all the time about her grandfather and what he was like and what he would have liked. And I think a lot about, maybe more importantly, I think a lot about how I was raised. You know, I really admired my father as a parent. And now that I am a parent, I, of course, try to channel him and think about him and raising our daughter. So he feels very, very present. And that does go some way to not to ameliorating the loss, but to bringing alongside it this actually very sweet sensation of, oh, you know, these are the generations. This is how this works. I, to the best of my abilities, I pass my father on to my child.
Lost and Found, a memoir, is the new book by Catherine Schultz, who joins us on the roundtable this morning. You struck me very much at the beginning of our conversation when you said that the most interesting word in that Lost and Found was and. And how true is that? I mean, the fact that it's always the and, right? That... you're dealing with both these things, and they're both huge. They're both enormous, and they're both so meaningful in very different ways. But they are bookends, aren't they?
They really are. And yes, you know, I write in the book about just the way that our love truly is inseparable from our grief, and vice versa. I mean, the price of loving anyone or anything is living with the fact that someday you're going to lose it. But I've just been so mindful, you know, obviously I did not start writing this book in the middle of a pandemic, but if anything has ever brought home the extent to which all of us live with multiple feelings and experiences at once, boy, you know, that this era of our life has done so. I mean, I just see all around me the way people are contending with, you know, on the one hand, you're incredibly anxious about your immunocompromised mother. And on the other hand, you know, maybe you're delighted to have more time at home with your children and actually really grateful about that. Or maybe you're grateful to have more time alone with your children, but also exhausted and frustrated because you have no childcare and regular schooling has been disrupted. So I do think there's a way that we're living really acutely with this sensation of and right now.
Your second date with your partner lasted 19 days.
Yes, it did.
you write about it beautifully.
I mean,
but
I guess you could say it lasted a lifetime. But
yes, that's right. Yeah. But that says a lot, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. I mean, it was really, it was wonderfully fun to write about falling in love. And I don't say that lightly because I'm not someone who finds writing fun and easy all the time, although I love to do it. But yes, I met my partner, and part of this book is a little bit of a meditation on this notion of falling in love at first sight, because it's very strange and it's quite hard to believe in or put any credence in. But the fact of the matter is, you know, not quite at first sight, but I mean, I can tell you for sure at some point in that second date, I called my sister and I said, I met the woman I'm going to marry. So yeah. Yes, it was really thrilling and still is.
Do you, and maybe I'm wrong to put these two together, but tell me how you feel about it. I mean, one of the things that I learned when both my parents passed is you learn a lot about your parents that you didn't know. And for the large part of your life that you were not present for, or their life that you were not present for, and you find out things. And I'm interested in is there an intersection of finding out those things and dealing with them, good, bad, and indifferent things, and then also just learning about somebody else as you fall in love with them?
So it's a really insightful question. So in my case, you know, my father is honestly kind of an open book. And so yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I've spoken with people who've had the experience of really kind of revising their sense of their parents after they lost one or both of them, in ways, as you said, sometimes very good and sometimes challenging. I didn't quite have that, although I had the really wonderful experience of just hearing from a lot of people who had known him, in many cases, as you suggest, at very different times of his life. You know, I inevitably knew my father as a father, and it was touching over and over again to hear from people who knew him as a college roommate, you know, and as a 15-year-old in the Detroit City school system. So, you know, it's this wonderful kind of 360-degree view, which is always a little bit denied to us as children. So that was really wonderful. And yes, I like the connection between that and meeting someone and falling in love with them, because, you know, as I say in the book, I think a lot of falling in love is the experience of it is you're just like famished for information. You just want to learn everything you can about someone. They're so interesting to you and so precious to you already. And it's really exciting to learn about someone. And it has that same kind of 360-degree phenomenon where, you know, at first you just see them, but then you get to see them around their friends, and then you get to see them around their family, and then you get to see them, you know, talking about their own family history. And it is it's very joyful and very fulfilling.
And maybe I'm pushing a square peg into a round hole, but it seems to me, at least in my experience, that there's similarities too, and I think you touch on this in the book, that when death comes, you feel there is. You sort of wander around and wondering, well, like, why? I'm sorry, this happens every day to people, and why do we not talk about this all the time? Because where does this come from? And you feel kind of the same way when you fall in love. Like, whoa, I'm sorry, where did this is a thing? Oh, I could feel this good. That's kind of amazing that we take this stuff kind of for granted.
I think that's absolutely right. You know, I mean, it's a funny thing about these sweeping life experiences like grieving or falling in love or having a baby.
Yeah.
That they're completely commonplace, right? They literally happen every day, multiple times a day. And yet, of course, when they're happening to you, they are the most important and meaning-saturated thing that's ever occurred in the history of the universe. And I think it's quite touching, actually. I mean, it's wonderful that we can all be amazed and gripped in this kind of existential way by the world all over again. We should probably be a little bit more interested in one another's story of love and grief and sympathetic to how gripping it is to that person while it's happening. But there's just nothing like experiencing it for yourself.
I remember being chided by my very new wife at our wedding reception when I said to her, "This is such an amazing feeling. I now know why so many sitcoms use it as the final episode." Like, it's just that great feeling. Like, this is like, you can't top that, you know? And so yeah. let's leave here and try to top that. And maybe it was the comparison to a sitcom, but you get the point.
Yes, and I think it's quite wonderful to realize that what's meaningful to everyone else is meaningful to us too.
Yes. Yeah. Did you feel, a lot of ways I could ask this question, but the most direct way is, do you write this for you? In the sense of, because there are points in the book where it comes off as just a beautiful eulogy to your father. There are points where it comes off to just a beautiful love letter to your partner. But ultimately, you write it for you, I assume.
I do, for good or ill. I have tried, as I mature as a writer, to think a little bit more about the experience of readers, because I do think that's important, and including in really basic ways. You know, you have to think about your reader's experience, or you won't notice things like gaps in information where they will struggle to follow you because they are not living inside your head, or, you know, how something might sound if you aren't, you know, occupying your own particular little patch of mental terrain. So I try to think about readers, but I do and always have kind of fundamentally written for myself. And you're not wrong to think that in this case, it's not exactly that I wrote this book for my father or my partner. I mean, obviously, tragically, my father will never get to see it, which is a little bit of, a painful thing about an otherwise joyful mm-hmm. experience with this book. But I certainly wrote it to try to capture what it is about them that is so wonderful to me. So it was a little bit more of a outward-facing book in that sense than some of my writing. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I'm writing to please myself, and that turns out to be difficult. I'm a very fussy reader.
and no matter, barring writing about the birth of your child, I would assume that nothing ever could be as personal as what you wrote in this book. So whatever you take on as a subject next, it could never be as personal as this.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, it's impossible to know what life is going to present us with, and it's impossible to know what among the things life presents us with we'll want to write about. So, I don't want to stake any claims about what will or won't happen to me or what I will or won't have to say about it. But, you know, this book was a departure for me. I don't shy away from the first person, but I'm not normally a very personal writer. You know, it's right. One thing to have a kind of narrative eye and another thing to sort of talk about your life. So I don't anticipate, it's not like I have three more memoirs lined up. I don't anticipate, making a habit of this. And I really enjoy reporting, and I enjoy criticism and, you know, other kinds of modes that I work in. So yes, this was probably about as personal as it's likely to get.
One of the blurbs in the back of the book is, Andy Borowitz is a friend. I love him very much. But
lucky you.
And I I will just say that he writes that Lost and Found is the most daring of books, a memoir by a happy person. And I think that beautifully describes it. The book is Lost and Found. It is by Catherine Schultz. It is published by Random House. Catherine, what a great pleasure to have you on our program. I thank you for sharing with us this morning.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you so much.
Again, the name of the book is Lost and Found, a memoir by Catherine Schultz. The book is published by Random House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.